A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. What's the smallest Linux system that can actually do something useful? Serve a web page, run a health check, act as a DNS resolver. He wants to know how bare bones we can get, where BusyBox fits in, and how these stripped down systems become the secret source behind efficient Docker stacks in production. There's a whole ladder of minimalism here, and most people don't realize how far down it goes.
The ladder goes all the way to literally nothing. The T from scratch D image in Docker is not a small Linux. It is 0 bytes. No shell, no libc, no file system tools. You bring a statically compiled binary and that's your entire container. I've seen Go HTTP servers in scratch containers that clock in at about 5 megabytes total. The kernel plus 5 megabytes of binary. That's the whole runtime.
My leaf medicine reference charts are larger than that. And the thing actually serves traffic?
And here's why. The Linux kernel doesn't need a user land to run a process. When you call the exec on a binary, the kernel loads the ELF, maps it into memory, and jumps to the entry point. If that binary was compiled with the estatic flag, every library function it needs is baked right into the executable. No dynamic linker, no shared objects. The kernel handles system calls directly. You don't even need a file system beyond what Docker gives you. Just the binary and maybe pproc and maybe sysproc that the kernel synthesizes anyway.
The entire concept of a Linux system, init system, shell, core utils, package manager, that's all optional window dressing. The kernel will happily run a single binary and call it a day.
This is what most people miss about containers. A container is not a virtual machine. There is no second kernel, no boot process, no init. Docker sets up namespaces and groups, hands the process to the host kernel, and says, run this. The operating system in the container is purely the user land you chose to include. You can include none of it.
Scratch is the floor. But Daniel mentioned BusyBox, and that's the next rung up. What actually is BusyBox?
BusyBox is a single binary that re-implements over 300 Unix utilities. The static build is about 1 megabyte. 1 megabyte gives you tstru, hrugrept, cdro, crugrept, cdoc, tubucronk, poquonkrocronk, tubucronk, tuok, cronk, tu, croak, tuok, cronk. The BusyBox website describes itself as the Swiss Army knife of embedded Linux, and for once the marketing is accurate.
300 utilities. How does that work mechanically?
The multi-call binary trick. The BusyBox binary checks Aardvark trees, the name it was invoked as, and branches to the appropriate internal function. You create a symlink, bingergripe points to bingergripe, points to bingergripepas. When someone types grep it, the kernel launches BusyBox. BusyBox sees I was called as grep and runs its internal grep implementation. Same binary, 300 different entry points. The file system is just a tree of symlinks all pointing back to the same file.
It's like one person who, depending on which hat they put on, becomes a plumber, or an electrician, or a chef. Same person, different hat, different job.
It works because most Unix utilities share a huge amount of common code, argument parsing, file IO, string manipulation. BusyBox deduplicates all of that into a single code base. The GUKER-UTILS approach is separate binaries for everything, each linking against glibc, each carrying its own copy of common routines. BusyBox says, put it all in one binary and share the code. That's how you get 300 utilities into 1 megabyte.
What's the catch?
BusyBox utilities are feature light. No et color autos for grep. Limited regex support. Basic and extended work, but Perl compatible regex doesn't. Some esoteric flags on standard tools are missing. The doc implementation is a subset. But for what you do in a container, parse logs, check ports, run a cron job, fetch a health endpoint, you almost never hit those limitations.
It's not GNU CoreUtils, it's the IKEA version. Flat-packed, missing some ornate trim, but functionally still a bookshelf.
In many cases, it's faster. Some BusyBox utilities have hand-tuned assembly for common operations. The Grepton BusyBox can be faster than Grep for simple pattern matching because it doesn't carry the optimization overhead for complex patterns. The BusyBox developers have been optimizing this for embedded systems since the mid-90s, routers, phones, set-top boxes. If your device had a Linux kernel and less than 16 megabytes of flash, you were probably running BusyBox.
How does this translate to Docker? Daniel's question is specifically about Docker stacks.
The official Docker BusyBox image is about 1.2 megabytes compressed. You pull it in under a second on any reasonable connection. Compare that to the Ubuntu base image, around 77 megabytes compressed for the slim version, closer to 200 for the full image. On a cold Kubernetes node, pulling Ubuntu might take 30 seconds. Pulling BusyBox is effectively instant.
That pull time isn't just about convenience. If you're auto-scaling, cold start latency is everything.
When your cluster needs to spin up new pods to handle a traffic spike, every second spent pulling images is a second your users are waiting. A 1.2 megabyte image means your health check sidecar is running before the orchestrator finishes scheduling the next pod. This directly impacts your SLOs. It's not about disk space. Disk is cheap. It's about time and attack surface.
Let's talk about attack surface. Fewer binaries means fewer CVEs.
In 2025, the Ubuntu base image averaged around 40 critical CVEs at any given time. That's the baseline before you even install your application. Every one of those is a binary sitting in your container, whether you use it or not. The BusyBox image averaged 2 to 3 critical CVEs over the same period. That's an order of magnitude reduction in your vulnerability baseline.
The BusyBox codebase is smaller, so the maintainers can actually audit the whole thing.
The entire BusyBox source tree is something a single competent developer can read and understand. The full Ubuntu package set? Nobody audits that end to end. You're relying on the distribution security team to triage and patch, and they do good work, but the surface area is enormous. With BusyBox, you know exactly what's in there because there isn't much.
We've got scratch at the absolute floor. No user land, just a static binary. Then BusyBox at 1 megabyte, 300 utilities, no package manager. What's the next rung?
And this is where people get confused, because Alpine uses BusyBox as its user land, but it's not just BusyBox with a package manager. Alpine makes a much bigger change under the hood. It replaces Glibs with MusclLibc.
That's the thing that breaks.
Musl is a from-scratch implementation of the C standard library. It's smaller, simpler, and more standards compliant than Glibc in many ways. But it's not a drop-in replacement. Binaries compiled against Glibc expect specific symbol versions, specific thread, local storage layouts, specific memory allocator semantics. If you take a pre-compiled Python wheel built on Ubuntu and try to run it on Alpine, it might segfault because it can't find the Glibc symbols it expects.
The trade-off for Alpine's 5 megabyte base image is that you might have to recompile your stuff.
Or use the Alpine packaged versions, which are compiled against Musl. AKK add Python 3 gets you a Python built for Musl. The problem is third-party binaries distributed only as Glibc-linked builds. Then you're either recompiling from source or not using Alpine.
This is why you see teams go from scratch to BusyBox to Alpine to Debian Slim to full Ubuntu. Each step adding compatibility at the cost of size and surface area. It's a genuine engineering trade-off, not a purity test.
The latter exists for a reason. Start at scratch. If your app is Go or Rust and you can compile static, you're done. 5 megabytes, zero attack surface beyond your own code. Need a shell for debugging? Need a package manager because you have runtime dependencies? Need Glibc compatibility because something won't compile against Musl? Need the full Ubuntu user land for a complex legacy application? Fine, use Ubuntu. But you should know why you're at each rung.
There's a pattern I've seen in production. The multi-stage build, where the final image is scratch or distroless, but the build stage is a full Debian image with all the compilers and headers.
That's the standard pattern. Your build stage pulls in gcct make libsoldevis. That image might be 500 megabytes. It compiles your Go or Rust binary, and then the final stage is from scratch, COP from builder app server, server, CMD, CMD, server. The build image gets thrown away. Your production artifact is just the binary.
If you need a shell for debugging in production.
This is where the operational trade-off bites. With Scratch or Destrolus, you can't kubectl execa into the container and poke around. There's no shell to exec into. If something goes wrong, your debugging surface is logs and metrics, which should be sufficient. But it requires a different operational maturity. You can't just hop in and ask curl localhost.
That's why I see teams run a BusyBox sidecar alongside their Destrolus app container.
The app container runs the service. Minimal, secure, no shell. The sidecar runs BusyBox and has Chubbugetty, Wgetty, Wgetty, Icketty, Icketty, Wgetty. If you need to check connectivity, you exec into the sidecar, not the app container. The sidecar shares the pod's network namespace, so ncvz localhost 88.dull from the sidecar hits the app container's port. You get debugging without bloating your production image.
Walk me through a real production stack that uses this approach.
Nginx reverse proxy on Alpine, about 15 megabytes total. Behind it, a Python API service on a Destrolus image. Google's Destrolus Python includes the runtime and your code, but no shell, no package manager. Maybe 50 megabytes. Redis on Alpine, another 15 megabytes. Then a BusyBox sidecar in the API pod for log rotation and health checks. The whole stack is under 150 megabytes. A single Ubuntu-based monolith would be triple that before you wrote a line of application code.
The BusyBox sidecar is doing what exactly?
Health checks are the most common pattern. Wget to spider HTTP, localhost 8naew healthy on a cron schedule. If the health endpoint stops responding, the sidecar can trigger an alert. It can also handle log rotation, plus a shell script that compresses and ships logs, or act as a network debugger, TNCVZ DB5432, to verify database connectivity.
Kubernetes has standardized on BusyBox for debugging. Kubectl run it. Image BusyBox is the default incantation for checking network connectivity from inside the cluster.
Because it's the smallest thing that gives you a shell and networking tools. You don't want to pull a 200 megabyte Ubuntu image just to run tping.
Let's talk about Destrolus, because it's a different philosophy from BusyBox.
Destrolus images take the opposite approach. BusyBox says, here's a tiny toolbox with everything. Destrolus says, here's the absolute minimum to run your specific runtime and nothing else. A Destrolus Python image includes Glibsy, the Python interpreter, and your code. No shell, nodeless, nodeSST, ARS, no kata, no package manager. You can't even Docker exec into it.
It's Scratch, but with the runtime pre-installed. You don't have to compile your Python app statically, which you can't really do, but you also don't get any operating system cruft.
The security profile is excellent because there's literally nothing to exploit except your application and the Python runtime. No wget that could exfiltrate data. No NC that could open a reverse shell. No package manager that could install malware. If an attacker compromises your app, they're stuck in a room with no tools.
The downside being that when your app breaks at 3 a.m. and you can't exec in to debug it, you're going to curse whoever chose Destrolus.
That's the genuine tension. The security team loves Destrolus. The on-call engineers want a shell. The BusyBox sidecar pattern is the compromise. Secure app container, debuggable sidecar. But it adds complexity to your pod spec, and now you have two containers to maintain instead of one.
There's no free lunch, but the lunch is at least cheaper with BusyBox.
And there's one more dimension people miss. The CVE response cycle. When a critical vulnerability drops in Glibsy or OpenSSL, every container with those libraries needs to be rebuilt and redeployed. With a Scratch image, you don't have Glibsy or OpenSSL in the container at all. Your Go binary statically linked them, so you rebuild your app with the patched version and you're done. The attack surface reduction isn't just about fewer vulnerabilities. It's about faster remediation when they do occur.
In a world where CVEs are dropping constantly, that remediation velocity matters.
It matters enormously, and even the 2-3 CVEs in BusyBox might not apply to your use case. If the vulnerability is in BusyBox's Telnet implementation and you're not using Telnet, you're not affected. With a full distro, you have the vulnerable code on disk even if you never use it, and your security scanner is going to flag it.
Your compliance team is chasing ghosts, because the base image shipped with libpnz and there's a CVE in libpnz, even though your container is a Go API server that never touches image files.
That's the operational cost of bloat. Every unused package is a false positive in your vulnerability scanner, a line item in your compliance review, a thing you have to explain to auditors. Multiply that by 40 CVEs across 50 microservices, and your security team is spending half their time writing exemption memos.
Let's get practical. What's the rule of thumb for someone looking at their own Docker stacks?
Audit your base images first. Run Docker images C and look at the size column. If you have a simple Go service on a 700 megabyte Ubuntu image, something's wrong. That service could be 5 megabytes on scratch. Then ask what you actually need from the base image. If your app is compiled, Go, Rust, C with static linking, start with that from scratch. If you need a shell for debugging, try from BusyBox. If you need a package manager, try from Alpinel. Only reach for Debian or Ubuntu when you have a specific dependency that requires glibc or a package unavailable on Alpine.
For teams on Kubernetes, standardize on BusyBox for debug and init containers.
The BusyBox image is so small and so universally used that it's probably cached on every node in your cluster already. Your init container that waits for the database. Paul L BusyBox LSHC until NCDB 5432 do sleep 1 don't. That's pulling from cache starting instantly, costing you almost nothing.
I want to go back to the multi-core binary architecture. You said it deduplicates shared code. How much shared code are we talking about?
A surprising amount. Ggrep, sed, and awkall read files line by line, parse patterns, write output. In the GNU world, each has its own implementation of line reading, its own argument parser, its own memory management. BusyBox has one line reading routine, one argument parser, one set of memory allocation wrappers. The deduplication is aggressive. Plus, the BusyBox developers are maniacal about code size. They'll write something in assembly if it saves a few hundred bytes.
This was originally built for embedded systems where every kilobyte mattered.
Routers with 4 megabytes of flash, phones with 16 megabytes of storage. The entire Linux user land had to fit in whatever space was left after the kernel. BusyBox was the answer. It still is. If you have a smart thermostat or a Wi-Fi router running Linux, it's almost certainly running BusyBox under the hood. The Docker use case is just the cloud-native world discovering what embedded engineers have known for 30 years.
There's something philosophical here. We spent decades building increasingly complex operating systems, init systems, service managers, logging daemons, package managers, and now we're stripping it all away. Containers are taking us back to the Unix philosophy of do one thing well, but at the OS level.
The kernel never needed any of that. The kernel's job is to manage processes, memory, and devices. Everything else is userland convention. Containers make that separation explicit. You can run a process on the Linux kernel with no userland at all. That's not a hack, it's the design.
What's the weirdest minimal container you've seen in production?
A team ran a DNS resolver in a Scratch container. The binary was a custom Go build implementing a caching DNS forwarder. No shell, no utilities. It handled something like 50,000 queries per second. The entire container was smaller than the Ubuntu base image they'd been using before they even installed Bind. And because it was Scratch, the only thing that could break was their own code. No CVE in some random library was going to take down their DNS.
That's the dream. Your infrastructure is just your code, running directly on the kernel, with nothing in between to surprise you.
It's increasingly achievable. Go and Rust both compile to static binaries by default now. 10 years ago, static linking was a pain. You'd fight with library paths and symbol resolution. Now Go build just does it. The ecosystem has moved toward minimalism.
Let's address the misconception I know is coming. Someone listening is thinking, Alpine is just BusyBox with a package manager.
Alpine uses BusyBox as its userland, yes. But it also replaces glibc with muscle-libc, and that's the bigger change. Muscle is a completely independent implementation of the C standard library. Not a fork, not a stripped-down glibc. It's written from scratch with different design goals, smaller, simpler, stricter standards compliance. But because it's different, binaries compiled against glibc don't always work. The dynamic linker expects different symbol versions. Thread local storage works differently. The memory allocator has different performance characteristics.
When someone says my Python app doesn't work on Alpine, It's usually not a busy box problem. It's a muzzle problem.
The classic failure mode is a pre-compiled wheel built on a glib system. Pip install grabs the wheel, tries to load it, and the dynamic linker fails because it can't find glibc2. The fix is to install the Alpine packaged version or compile from source. But that's friction, and not every team wants to deal with it.
Which is why Debian Slim exists. It's the I give up, just give me glibc and apt option.
That's fine. The point isn't to be a minimalist purist. The point is to make conscious choices about what you're shipping. If you need glibc, use a glibc-based image. But no, that's the reason you're at that rung, and understand what you're trading off.
You mentioned Docker history and if it is tools for auditing image bloat. How would someone actually do that audit?
Docker history shows you every layer in your image and how much space each one adds. You'd be shocked how often you see a layer that's install build essential, adding 300 megabytes, and that layer is in the final image because someone didn't use a multi-stage build. Dive It is a third-party tool that gives you a more interactive view. What files were added in each layer and where the wasted space is. Between those two, you can usually find the bloat in about 5 minutes.
The fix is usually a multi-stage build.
Build in a fat image, copy the artifact to a slim image. It's the single highest leverage Docker optimization, and it's been supported since Docker 17.05. There's no excuse not to use it.
We've climbed the whole ladder. Scratch at the bottom, kernel, and a static binary. Busybox at 1 megabyte, 300 utilities, no package manager. Alpine at 5 megabytes, Busybox plus muzzle plus ache. Distroless runtime only, no shell. Debian Slim, Glibscut and apt stripped down, and full Ubuntu at the top. Everything including the kitchen sink.
The right answer depends on your application. The important thing is to know the ladder exists and to climb down it as far as your dependencies allow. Every rung you descend reduces your attack surface, speeds up your deployments, and simplifies your compliance story.
One open question. Where does this go next? We've got WASM and unikernels emerging as even more minimal alternatives. Does the Busybox-style minimal container become obsolete?
I don't think so. Not for a long time. WASM and unikernels solve a narrower problem. They're great for edge functions, serverless, highly constrained environments. But the Docker and Kubernetes ecosystem is built around Linux containers. The tooling, the orchestration, the monitoring, the debugging workflows, all of it assumes a Linux process model. Busybox and Alpine and Distroless fit into that model perfectly. They're not competing with it. They're the most efficient way to use it.
For the foreseeable future, the ladder holds.
The ladder holds. And most teams are still way higher up it than they need to be. So here's my challenge to anyone listening. Pull your most used Docker image, check the base, and ask yourself honestly, do I really need all of that?
Good place to land. And now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In the early 1500s, the Guild of Pinmakers in Nuremberg required apprentices to produce a masterpiece pin entirely without the use of tongs, using only their fingers as proof of skill. The ritual was called the finger probe, and failing it meant the apprentice could never open his own workshop. The English word probe traces back through this same Germanic root, which originally meant to test by touch.
Finger probe?
I'm not sure what to do with that information, but I'm glad I have it.
Thanks to Hilbert Flemingtoff for producing. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this, pull your Docker images and audit your base layers, and then tell us what you found. Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.